Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm attorney Barry Vogel. The theme music for Radio Curious is entitled The Last Cowboy, composed by and normally played at this time by Peter Elman. It comes from Peter Elman's 1993 CD entitled Durango Saloon. In this edition of Radio Curious, our theme music is played by Alex DeGrasse, guitarist extraordinaire, who I had the pleasure of recording as part of our conversation that occurred on October 27th, 2008. That conversation brought us to the question, what does a cumulus cloud sound like when played on a guitar? DeGrasse played trumpet as a young child, and when he was about 12, his brother was given a guitar, which led to Alex's lifelong passion and eventual inspiration, which allows us to hear what a cumulus cloud sounds like. Alex DeGrasse is also the musical director of the Winter Concert to benefit the Scholarship Fund of SPACE, the School of Performing Arts and Cultural Education, which will be held at the Mendocino College Auditorium on Saturday evening, November 22nd. Our conversation began when I asked Alex about his relationship with the guitar. Alex DeGrasse, welcome to Radio Curious.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks, Barry.
Tell us about your relationship with the guitar.
Well, I started playing when I was 12 years old. My mother brought a guitar home one day, hoping that my older brother, who was 3 years older and loved to sing, would also enjoy playing the guitar as a way to accompany himself. He'd played in school choirs and so forth. I had been playing trumpet in the school bands and orchestras since I was eight, but when I picked up guitar that week, it suddenly became mine.
And you put down the trumpet. It's been guitar since.
Yeah, in fact, I remember giving my trumpet away to somebody a couple of years later, literally just saying, here, take it. I don't use
so
it.
So what
anymore.
Is it about the guitar? I've also played since I've been about 12.
Ah, well, maybe you know then or have some affinity for this. The guitar is one of the most versatile musical instruments in the world. It's played all over the world, and it's played in so many different ways, everything from folk music to classical to jazz to rock and roll and all kinds of world music styles. There's something about having that direct contact with the thing that makes the sound, i.e. the string in this case. A piano you can play chords on and is also an incredibly versatile instrument, but you're touching the keys, and then the key in turn has a hammer which strikes the string. With a guitar, you're touching that thing. You can feel the vibration in your fingertips.
You touch the string with both hands.
Yeah, you touch it with both hands. You can manipulate it in so many different ways. When I was a kid, I liked to sing. Unlike the trumpet, you can play and sing at the same time.
Can you give us some examples of the audio manipulation that you can do with a guitar? As opposed to playing a tune, we'll get to that in a
little
while.
Right, right. Well, I'll just play you a little fragment here. For example, if I play this chord, maybe you can hear some of the strings are played open and some of them are fretted. And the ones that are fretted, I'm bending in a very slow vibrato.
Before you go too far, for people who may not know what it means to be fretted and what the frets are on the guitar.
Right. Well, unlike, say, orchestral string instruments like violin and cello and so forth, which have nothing to stop the string under the fingerboard except your finger, you have to put your finger in a very precise spot. With a guitar, a lot of that work's being done for you by the fact that there's a metal fret or a little bar at spaced at intervals such that it tells you where the half tones are and all the notes of the scale. So I can play that scale and my finger doesn't have to be so precisely located on the fingerboard. Whereas with a violin, if it's just a little bit off, it's going to sound flat or sharp. So that's what a fret is. One of the other things I love about the guitar is there's a lot of resonance in the instrument. And if you alter the tuning of the instrument, you can change that resonance. You can bring out certain overtones more. And so that's something I've experimented quite a bit with.
Is there a message or a commentary without words in sound, as another way of saying it, that you like to present when you play?
First of all, just talking about pure sound, that's one of the most important things about playing any musical instrument. As a professional, I think one of the major goals is to keep improving your tone on the instrument, your ability to really get the fullest sound out of the instrument, and also explore the whole palette, the whole range of sound that you can get. You know, some people call it timbre or tone color. That, to me, is very important, the sound of the instrument itself. I'm playing for many years now without any pickups in my acoustic guitars, which means it's sort of what you hear is what you get. The other part of that question might be answered in saying, as a composer, arranger, I'm always trying to tell a story to a certain extent as well. And I think that's a little harder thing to grasp, which is, how do you take an impression or a story or an idea or a visual landscape, let's say, and convert that, translate that into a musical idea?
Well, Alex, if I had thought of that question, that's what I would like to ask you. So what's the answer?
I don't know if there's a full, complete answer, but I can talk a little bit about how I work. I'm very impressionistic in my approach to playing, writing and arranging music. And I also tend to work very much starting with a rhythmic idea. Even if that rhythmic idea is very slow, and as in this piece I might play it later in the program, it works from a rhythmic idea in that is it going to be slow, is it going to be fast, but is it going to be in 3-4 or 4-4, 5-4, and am I going to give it some of the nuances, a jazz or bluesy rhythm, or am I going to introduce some ideas from South American rhythms or Eastern European rhythms? And all these things are like the tools, but the being able to tap into the idea of telling a story or communicating with your audience that there's something else going on in music just besides a series of notes and rhythms and all the technical stuff. And I think that comes from being able to visualize in some way, and when I say visualize, it may not be visual in the sense of looking at something with your eyes, but being able to visualize a feeling, an impression, a scenario, a rhythm, a place, and be able to express that musically. I wrote a piece, for example, some years ago called Causeway, Crossing the Great Salt Lake Causeway in Utah, on a train. And it just sort of, for me, it kind of captures not only the rhythm of the train, but it captures the sort of wide, expansive, open desert landscape. There's technical devices I could say, well, it's got this rhythm and it's at this tempo, you know. Etc. So you can feel a little bit maybe of this sensation of a train on tracks, but the melody unfolds very slowly, and the way the harmony is arranged, I think it also creates a sense of a wide open space. And how you arrive at that, I think, is to a certain extent is trying to lose yourself in that place initially. You try to connect yourself with the visual experience or the emotional experience with a sense of vibration or music. So those two worlds somehow come together. And this is a very hard thing to talk about, because ultimately all you can say is, well, it feels like water to me, or it feels like somebody died.
Well, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Is where we take the senses of touch and vision and turn them into sound and find out what your experience is, both in hearing or seeing and then hearing, mm-hmm. or seeing and then making the sound in the compositions that you do.
Well, I have at times listened to mechanical sounds in the city, for example, or sound of birds or water, and actually tried to imitate that sound. So I think, you know, I used to think of myself a little bit as somebody who'd go out might go out with her sketch pad and sketch in the woods, but instead of sketching with a pencil and sketching the landscape or the cityscape, that I was sort of gathering soundscapes, as they were, and then starting to work those into something that also had a melody. I have, for example, listened to things like that and actually transcribed them a little bit and said, standing downtown in San Francisco sounds a little bit like this, or it gives me this impression. And then, but a lot of it also is a visual experience for me, where I might look at a landscape and you see something that looks kind of jagged, and you try to play something that feels jagged.
So the playing follows the view.
You're on to the idea. For me, it's usually a little kernel of something that gets me started. Somebody must have said years ago, creativity is 2% inspiration, 98% perspiration. I think that's really true, because usually for me, it's just a little glimmer of something that I say, aha, I think I can build something out of that. The rest of it comes through hard work, sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to go sit down for every 4 hours every morning and work on my music. And sometimes it comes quickly, and sometimes comes very slowly, bit by bit. Somewhere along the line in your day, it had an experience which said, huh, I think I can, I heard something there, either I heard something or I saw something that I can now use as the kernel.
Does this come daily?
I'd say it comes daily. It's like a lot of things, especially when you've been doing it for a long time like I have. Sometimes you discount things and say, yeah, that's nice, but it's not really that interesting. Something better come along. Now I work with a combination of working by ear and also actually writing the notation of the music out. And what I find is when I sit down and write the notation out, I start to see certain patterns that maybe weren't evident to me before, either rhythmic cross-rhythm patterns or repetitions or development of melody starts to merge, and I say, aha, I see a pattern there. That
in this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Alex Degrassi of Redwood Valley, California, sitting here in the studios of Radio Curious with his guitar. Alex is a world-renowned guitar player who has many different stories and tunes and things he's seen that he tells us about in sound. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Alex, let's talk for a moment about the program that you are putting together for Space, sponsored by Laurel Neer and Paulette Arnold. They're the co-directors.
They're the co-founders and directors of the program. It's a great program right here in Ukiah Valley. It's a school for performing arts for kids, I think, 2 through 18, so everything from little tiny kids to high school kids. After school, summers, theater, dance, music. They do a wonderful job, and this will be the fifth year coming up that I will have been involved as the music director for the annual concert to benefit the scholarship fund.
And this year it'll be Saturday, November 22nd at the Mendocino College Auditorium.
Yeah, at the Center Theater. The formula for this program we've been doing is to gather together some local musicians that include myself, as well as always have a special guest group or musician. And our special guest this year is Venezuelan singer Maria Marquez. And Maria is living in the Bay Area, grew up in Venezuela, been to Berklee School of Music. She's also been back and forth and spent a lot of time in the Caribbean. And her music is a very interesting blend of traditional folkloric rhythms from the Caribbean, as well as jazz and her own composition. It's a mixture of jazz and world music.
You're also going to be playing with Joel Cohen, a cellist of world renown.
Yeah, he plays with a Quartet San Francisco, which is a string quartet that sort of specializes in tango and arrangements of jazz. They're all classically trained musicians, so they can also turn around and play you a Beethoven string quartet, if you like. His brother Jeremy's the founder. Joel moved up here in the last year and has gotten quite active in the community. He's a wonderful player. He's played with a lot of symphonies. Joel and I will be playing some duets. We'll be playing everything from maybe a jazz standard to probably play a 4A piece, classical piece. I've arranged an old folk song into kind of a Balkan rhythm, and so we're just having fun.
When you play with an instrument that's really quite different from the guitar, the cello, is there anything special that you have to do?
If you're going to arrange or compose, you have to know the range of the instrument to begin with, so you don't write something that they can't play. But you also have to think a little bit about how that instrument blends with the one that you play so that you get some interesting sounds. I think cello and guitar is a nice combination. The fact that it's bowed gives it quite a different texture. And when it's played pizzicato, it can sound a little bit like a bass.
I noticed that the fingernails on your right hand look a little different than those on your left hand, which you press the notes down with your left and pick with the right.
Right. They're very short on the left hand, and that's to keep the fingernail from interfering with holding down the strings on the fingerboard. They're somewhat longer on the right hand and filed and shaped in such a way as to allow me to pick the string with the nail, and that gives more definition to the sound. You can still play it with the, I can still play it with the flesh of my fingertips, but having that option to play it one way or the other gives you probably the best range of timbre or tone color you can get out of the instrument.
So with that option and some of the things that you have seen, can we hear something?
Sure. I'm going to play a piece that I wrote about 10 years ago. It's called Cumulus Rising, and it's part of a collection called The Water Garden, in which all of the music was sort of composed on the theme of water.
Thank you. I like the twinkle in your eye as you play that.
Yeah.
It's clearly there, the man playing the sound that he has seen.
Yeah. Well, that's I like that piece as a good example, I think, because it's hopefully a very evocative of something for the listener. You know, for me personally, it has a very... I had a particular sensation that I was trying to capture when I wrote the piece. Cumulus Rising had a very sense of sort of an uplifting of moisture that, in that sense of air currents going up, and maybe all the rest that would accompany that visual sense of a changing sky, you know, maybe an oncoming storm. The nice thing about that piece is, as you could see while watching me, I use some extended techniques, and I get a lot of different sounds out of the instrument.
I see that.
Yeah, I'm using harmonics. I'm playing above the nut, getting that kind of random pitch of the strings, and so there's a little bit of percussion in there. And so it's a soundscape, in a way. There's a lot of sounds.
A large part of your professional career as a musician includes traveling.
Right.
How does that affect your life?
Well, you know, it's funny because when I went to university, I studied music some, but I actually got a degree in geography. So I've always been kind of fascinated by different places and been able to, I wouldn't say I speak any language other than English totally fluently, but I'm pretty good with, you know, three or four different languages. And so I enjoy that experience of going places, meeting people, seeing new things. Certainly capturing new ideas for music in impressions and so forth. You know, I like that, but when it comes down to it and you think about if... I just spent 3 weeks in Europe and I played 12 concerts, and you think that you're really playing about an hour and a half of those days, so you're... So much of the energy goes into traveling and getting there and getting set up and just to play for what ultimately seems like a short amount of time.
When you're playing, you have an auditorium full of friends, and when you go back to the hotel, you're by yourself. Is there a loneliness factor there?
There can be, yeah. You know, sometimes I travel with other musicians. Often I'll play on concerts with other musicians, so there's usually some camaraderie and also, you know, going out to have something to drink or eat after the show. And sometimes my wife will travel with me. But, yeah, it can be lonely. There's times, definitely, when you think, why am I here? I'm 5,000 miles away from home, and I'm living out of a suitcase, and there's bad TV, and I can't sleep, and this book's not very good, and I wish I could be at home.
When you're on the airplane, do you carry your guitar or check it?
I usually carry mine now. I have this very snazzy, highly contoured, super lightweight carbon fiber case, and it has a cloth cover around it, which makes it look more in-cabin friendly to the flight crew, so I usually can just put it overhead. Occasionally I have to check it, but because it is a real heavy-duty case, I've had very little problem on that. Say knocking on your wooden desk here.
Well, Alex DeGrassi, I really appreciate you being with us here on Radio Curious. And before we close, a couple of questions, if I may.
Yeah.
One is, what's a significant idea or concept or point that you've learned recently?
Well, it's one that I think I learn over and over again everywhere I go, but it's keeping... this may sound very generalized, but it's the idea of keeping your mind really open to new ideas and new experiences. When I was just in Hungary, I just came back, and I played with a wonderful guitar player named Sándor Szabó. And Sándor has a very unusual sense of harmony, and I asked him late at night after we were driving back from a concert, Sándor, where do you get your ideas? And he started explaining to me this whole theory he developed, and I thought, first, I thought, you're out of your mind. And then I listened while I went, right, it actually makes sense. It's great. I should be, you know, thinking more about that. So I think, really, it's one I keep coming back to. But the concept is just keeping your mind open, because that's where some of your best material comes from. Let's put it that way.
And can you tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately?
Well, I've actually been reading... Oliver Sacks's Musicophilia, which is, I guess, kind of a popular book these days. Yeah, he's famous for the book he wrote, I think, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, that I read years ago, and probably many other books, but in between I didn't read them. But I'm enjoying this, and he talks about everything from auditory hallucinations to people suddenly finding the need, who've never played music in their life, they have to play Chopin on the piano or something like that. So, fascinating.
Well, Alex DeGrassi, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious, and perhaps you can help us out with the theme music as we close out the program.
I'll give it my best.
Alex DeGrassi is a guitarist extraordinaire whose interpretation of the Radio Curious theme music entitled The Last Cowboy may be heard underlying what I'm saying now. You can learn more about Alex DeGrassi's work at his website, www.degrassi.com. The book Alex DeGrassi recommends is Musicophilia, Tales of Music and the Brain by Oliver Sacks. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.